Con Show with Anna DeBlantis right here on 720 WGN. Mark Sapelsa off this week, and so is Tom Skilling, we are told.
Mm-hmm.
So
they're vacationing together?
I don't believe so.
But, no, I don't think
they
so
are,
either.
They're on vacation, so we're not working this show. Let's put it that way.
Okay.
I don't know about the rest.
We'll miss them today.
Yes. But we have Gary McCarthy, pleased and proud to have him. He's the former superintendent of the Chicago Police Department. And another bloody weekend in Chicago, a long weekend, dozens shot. It's a little unclear when you do the numbers here. And I do have an operational question for you before we start. It does seem to me that when we count like weekend shootings, the way that the press counts them and the police count them are two different things. Am I wrong about that?
No, you're not wrong. People kind of seem to make them up as they like. First of all, hi guys. Hi, Anna.
Hi. How are you, Gary?
When I would look at a weekend, I would count from like 6 o'clock Friday evening mm-hmm. to 2,400 hours on Sunday. In other words, midnight on Sunday. And for a holiday weekend, I would have counted it through midnight Monday. Could have even thrown in a couple hours after that, just for a little bit of a hangover, if you will, or a lag over.
Yeah, because like 2 o'clock in the morning, 3 o'clock in the morning. I mean, is your sense? Is there a point at which? Because I've thought about this too. As I've been driving around like early in the mornings, mm-hmm. If like I have to go to the airport or something, I hear people talking about getting stuck up at 7 o'clock in the morning. We had that Rhyme Fest thing 2 weeks ago
right.
now.
Early in the morning,
early in the morning kind of stuff. Is there a time of day in Chicago where it's safer than others?
Well, in general, as you would expect, violent crime happens mostly Friday, Saturday evening, generally from about 8 o'clock at night to about 4 o'clock in the morning. That's the high time mm-hmm. for violent crime. 7 a.m., you would expect it to be one of the low points for crime. It really drops off between, say, 4 and 7 a.m., but there's still some residual violence. But then around, robberies, and it depends on the crime also and where you are. Violent crime generally happens at those high points that I mentioned.
Yeah.
But other crimes like larcenies and stuff that you're going to run into downtown happen during the daytime when people are out on the street. The other thing is burglaries obviously happen when people are at work during the day. So, it depends on the crime and it depends on the neighborhood.
You still have to look at August, though, and say, the highest in 20 years, that's what we've reached now. I mean, the trend line doesn't look good. It seems the problem may be, can we say, getting even worse? Or would you not say that?
It looks to me like it's getting worse, and I don't see an end in sight. I actually get depressed when I have these conversations
right.
Because the conditions aren't changing. We're continuing to do what put us in this condition. And what put us in this condition is reacting to, police shootings in the city of Chicago account for less than half of 1% of the shootings in Chicago. And by the way, they're not all bad shootings, as we all know. We did have a particularly bad shooting with Laquan McDonald. And, the upheaval that has followed it is costing people's lives. Every action has a reaction. And, between the musical chairs over at CPD, the amount of movement is unsettling. There's, got to be different directions coming from different people all the time. The interference from legislators and elected officials, like, for instance, passing the Community Relations Improvement Act, which gave us a 2-page contact card. Now, if an officer were to stop somebody on the street, it turns out that it's the equivalent of filling out a robbery report. So the conditions that put us in this place right now are not changing. They're continuing. Mm-hmm. Department of Justice is doing their investigation, and they're obviously going to lambaste us in some fashion. I found this out because it dawned on me when I was hired as a consultant to give somebody a report on their security. And we went out and looked at their security and said, hey, it's pretty good. And they were like, well, what are your recommendations? And my recommendations are to keep doing what you're doing. And I found out that people think because I'm consulting, you expect me to tell you that you're doing something wrong. And I don't expect anything different out of what's going to come out of the Department of Justice. All our policies are being rewritten by attorneys now, not police officers. And it's just harmful to policing in general. And certainly you see the results of it in the actions of the police departments across the country, not just Chicago.
Yeah. This is a national issue. Obviously Chicago is being hit. It's the focus of the nation. Mm-hmm. People are talking about it. You see on CNN when they're, and this is, Anna mentioned this earlier, during one of the midday blocks today on CNN, you had the anchor who's like crying on television about, isn't this awful in Chicago? It's awful. It is. I mean, there's no, I'm not trying to mitigate what's happening here. The loss of life is ridiculous. The amount of gun violence is ridiculous. We're gonna surge past 3,000 people shot in Chicago. 3,000 people,
right?
By the middle of this month. So I mean, it's ridiculous. However, there are a lot of reasons for it, and I think Gary, you're pointing out something that's really, really important. Police officers do feel neutered here. They feel as though if they go out and do their job proactively, they get out of the cars, they try to interrupt things while they are taking place. They try to they pull up on a group of teenagers standing around on a corner at midnight or 1 o'clock in the morning, Friday night, Saturday morning, and they ask them to disperse, that something bad's going to happen to them career-wise. And that's just good policing.
Or to themselves, you know, a violent reaction.
Right. And Ro, as you point out, the police officers feel weakened, let's put it that way. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, the criminals are more emboldened. And the legitimizing of that noncompliance with the law, when you have elected officials encouraging young people to resist the police, when you have organized movements doing the same thing, and when you have, look, I'm going to stay on this, I'm sorry, but, you know, Department of Justice telling us that we need to construct our crime strategies, not based upon crime data, not based on where crime is happening and when crime is happening or who's committing it, but based upon population demographics. That's what they're telling us. You can't stop this many people in this neighborhood because it's a disproportionate impact. Well, gun violence is also a disproportionate impact in those neighborhoods. And, you know, it actually, it's too deep to go into, but it actually, that direction runs contrary to the Supreme Court ruling in Terry versus Ohio in 1968, which is, they're called Terry stops. Those stops are based upon articulable, reasonable suspicion. If we went to the Supreme Court, if we got sued, and we said that we were using population demographics to determine how many people, where, and when we stop people, they would say it was unconstitutional. So, you know, right from the top, this whole thing is coming apart at the seams. And you see the results on the street every single day. This is the Constitution of the United States is under attack when people are being encouraged to not comply with the law or the police. I don't know if anybody gets that. And the results are what you see.
Eddie Johnson today spoke to reporters, obviously very frustrated. I mean, Eddie Johnson's been a Chicago police officer for a very long time, and a Chicago police boss for a very, very long time. So none of this is new to him. But when you're at the very top and you get to stand in front of that rake of cameras and microphones every day. The people want an answer, and his answer is very similar to what yours was, to what your predecessors were, which is you got the courts kicking these guys out too fast, the system taking in violent gun offenders and also people who just get picked up with a gun. Right. I mean, let's talk about this for a second, because we had a little bit of a debate about this earlier on the program. If you get picked up with it in possession of a gun and you're not properly licensed to have that gun on you, you're in a car, you got a gun, you don't have a FOID card, you certainly don't have a concealed carry card. The first time offenders, what happens to them?
Nothing.
Right. I mean, you charge them. Right. But then they just get popped out of the system.
Absolutely. And just to be clear, last year we started tracking our gun arrests. And in the first quarter of 2015, we arrested 688 people 692 times. Now, how did that happen? That's because we arrested four people twice in a 90-day period with illegal guns. By April 1st, the first day of the second quarter, 75%, in other words, 3 out of 4 of everybody who we arrested were back out on the street, and also 3 out of 4 of those individuals who we caught twice with a gun. I'm sorry, if you get caught twice in a 90-day period with an illegal gun, you are a public safety hazard, and the system doesn't support that. But, Ro, and I got to be clear about this, those are age-old issues in Chicago. Those are things that we were fighting, and you always heard me say that proactive, functional policing, supported by the laws, would help reduce the crime. The fact is, we've lost the rest of it. So those problems that we had in Chicago before, we have still, and we will have for a long time, until we get legislators who actually come around to the proper way of thinking.
Okay.
Until people get tired of people dying. But we've lost.
So when you say we've lost the rest of it,
very important things.
Go ahead, and those are?
We've lost proactive policing, and we've strengthened the criminal element. When you punch a police officer in the face, and we have video of it, and you don't get prosecuted because of politics, we're in a big problem. We have a big problem.
Right. What message does that send? But you saw the mayor call for more police, and he's going to unveil a full plan. It's just part of his plan later this month, but that more police officers going on the street, reaction to the vast amounts of overtime being the way we combat getting officers out there now. Is that going to help, or are you saying that until you solve that other problem, you really, it doesn't matter how many you have officers you have out there?
I'm a big believer in systems, and if you could do more, in other words, if you have more officers, that's great. But the system is not designed to succeed right now. The officers, and I feel terrible even saying this, but I understand how they feel. But the stops are down like 95%. They're not getting out of the cars, and they're not getting out of the cars because of what you brought up. That if they do get out, they get into a confrontation with somebody. Next thing you know, you're the next viral video. You lose your job, you get arrested, and you get dismissed. You lose your pension, you lose your mortgage, you lose your house, you might lose your family. So they don't feel that anybody has their back. I understand it, but it's not okay. You still got to go do your jobs.
If they've identified another thing that came out of Superintendent Eddie Johnson's speech today, or is speaking to the media, was that there are 1,400 people who are really doing almost all of the shooting. They're on that list of either most likely to get shot themselves or killed themselves by gun violence or commit the crimes themselves. If you have those people and you have those names, what would you do with that?
What I was doing with them, we were all over them. We were locking them up if they had warrants, if they didn't pay child support, if they had back taxes, whatever we could find to arrest them for, we arrested them for. The other thing that we did was we did alternative strategies of bringing them in and sitting them down and describing to not just them, but to their families, that they were going to be the next murderer in Chicago if they kept doing what they were doing.
So
tried and true methods that are proactive, yet not enforcement strategies. We had so many strategies. I don't even know what's going on anymore because I don't talk to anybody over there.
Well, it's this SSL list, they call it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is it the...
Correct.
Yeah.
Strategic subject list.
Right. So the SSL list, and we had talked about that over the years, about these... The media used to call them gang summits, but that's not really what they were. You were calling in guys who you knew were...
leaders, right? Some kind of hierarchy.
Not even leaders, but guys who were highly involved in things, right? Calling them leaders is glorifying. I think these are guys who found themselves constantly in trouble, and they were constantly getting stopped, and the cops knew who they were, and
generally on parole.
Yeah.
Generally on parole.
Right, exactly.
Gang members.
Or awaiting trial here, or whatever it is. They're on the streets, right? So these, and the thing is, and you talk to family members, and there are guys who just get, called by the siren of the streets, and they just go off into it, and they're not and the families even are like, well, what are we going to do about it? Whether it's parents or other people related to them, their girlfriends or the mothers of their kids, whatever it is that can't. I mean, some of them are troubled by what this guy is doing, and others are not. But it is what it is. I mean, they can't say to him, "Hey, you got to stop that," because the guy's like, "I'm not going to listen to you." And I don't know where other than what you guys have tried to do and we're doing, that unless you find a way to lock them up, you know, sending them back out on the streets, it's going to get deadly for somebody that night, including themselves. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is. I have no idea. I think about this all the time. Mm-hmm. And I thought about, you know, as I got to know you, Gary, and I know Phil Klein very well. It was on the job before you. I wonder, the mind reels with how to solve this problem. And yes, and last week everybody's calling for the National Guard. I mean, you can't do it. You can't do it. National Guard can't enter these streets armed. And if they do, it has to be for the purposes of enforcing a curfew. And then when they shoot somebody, what's going to happen?
Because their training is different.
This whole process, this is a process. There's not one magic solution to crime reduction. It's a process. Police legitimacy is a process. Cultural change in police departments is a process. And that process was well underway. I told you guys the numbers and just a couple to remind you. 40% reduction in overall crime during the 4 years that I was police superintendent. Back-to-back years of the lowest murder rate in the city since 1965. Seizing 23% more guns while making 20,000 less arrests per year. In other words, we didn't just go out there and target everybody. We targeted the right people at the right place at the right time. Yet, Department of Justice is telling us that we're disproportionately stopping people. So, you know, this can be done. And you can't tell me that just because, the current conditions, you can't tell me that the current conditions warrant what's happening right now. It's our reaction to it, right? What was it, the Hippocratic Oath? First, do no harm, right? We're misdiagnosing the problem, and we're not treating it. The police are not the problem in crime in this city. Yet they're the ones who are being investigated, not the criminals.
All right, Gary, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Gary.
Sir.
All right, take care.
All right, Gary McCarthy, former superintendent of Chicago Police Department.